What's up, Dan?
How you doing, Rob? You ready for a little art of the possible?
Oh, we're ready for some art of the possible. How was
Awesome.
your last episode? We talked a little bit about your COVID experience. You feeling better?
Back to 110%, man. Feel much better. Thank you.
Fantastic. Yesterday I got J&J.
Oh, you got the one timer?
Yeah, the one timer. So we'll
One time.
see. Yep.
I thought. Well, actually, I thought they didn't. They. I thought they paused that because of the blood clots.
Well, they supposedly are going to do that imminently. So I'm
Yeah.
watching out for the blood clots. So,
Well, good luck with that. Good
yeah,
luck.
thanks.
I'm glad you got it.
Thanks for bringing that up.
There you go. So,
So, what are we talking about today?
we are going to geek out today, and it is. I'm going to challenge you today because you're going to have to take a very geeky, wonky developer thing and make it understandable to marketing, branding, lay folks like myself.
Love it.
And the topic is API.
Bum bum bum. APIs.
APIs. So I got a few questions for you, but why don't we kind of just start with the most basic of what does API actually stand for? Do you even know, actually?
API stands for Application Programming Interface.
Good. You get a gold star for that one, Rob. I thought maybe
Awesome.
I'd catch you on that one because no one actually really knows what API actually even
No,
stands.
they would just throw it around like ISV.
Exactly. I got my SDR calling about my ISV on my,
Exactly.
right? Okay, so in a very so just answer the question of like what is an API, and then we're going to dive a little deeper into why APIs matter and how they change the world.
An API, do you want it sort of at the meta layer or at a technical level?
But give it whatever layer you want, and then I'm going to tease that apart so it gets into lay language.
Perfect. So people write software. Today, a lot of that software wants to ask other pieces of software to do something for them. And probably later in this call, we'll talk about why that's a good design pattern. And the way that one piece of software asks another piece of software to do something is by using an API, by making, and I'm going to use some standard terms here, by making a request of the other system's API.
Let me cut you off because that was good. Let me ask, because now when you're talking through that, part of me was like, oh, that's interesting. But I was like, who cares? Like, why, let's take a giant step back and say, why should anyone that's not a software developer give two cahoots about what an API actually is? And why should I know? Like, why should I have to know what an API is? Why is that important?
So let me give you one example that has been on my list of things I'd love to build one day. Imagine that you went to a trade show and you met a bunch of people at a booth and you wanted to engage them, and whoever replied and said, "Oh, I'd like to follow up," you said, "Hey, you know what? Thanks for your time. Sending you a $10 Starbucks gift card." Make
Is this
sense?
before or after COVID? Am I wearing a mask or
This
it,
is well before or well after COVID. Don't worry. This
okay.
is
Make sure
we're
everything.
in person.
Okay. So I meet someone and I want to soften them up a little bit and give them a $10
Yep,
Starbucks gift.
just make a nice gesture.
Bribe them, basically.
Great. I'm just taking, employee good behavior training, and now you bring that up. So, it has to be a material gift, by the way.
Gotcha.
So what would I do? I go on to Starbucks and one at a time, I laboriously get 25 gift cards.
Mind-numbingly painful having gone through that.
Mind-numbingly painful. And in fact, it makes me want to like forget all about it and go drive to the store and make it the cashier's problem instead of my problem.
And FedEx lattes across the country.
Right. And all that hassle. So instead, how cool would it be if Starbucks had a gift card API?
Well, so no, wouldn't it be cool if what? Did I take the AP out of that comment?
So wouldn't it be cool if I after I typed someone into Salesforce, there was a button that said, buy them a gift card. And there was a dropdown said Starbucks, $10. Boom, done. They get an email. It's all done by you. That's not even possible. Because Starbucks doesn't publish a gift card API.
Starbucks doesn't publish a what? Like, so to, again, like takeout API. I love this exercise. So takeout API. Starbucks doesn't publish what?
Starbucks has a website. They don't have an API. They don't have a public API. I'm sure that behind Starbucks.com, when you go and type and click and type and click and put in your credit card number, they call an API that says, give me a gift card number loaded with $10 and give it back to me so that I can put it in the website that Rob is looking at so he can subsequently torture himself with copying and pasting that gift card number into an email and so on and so forth, right?
So basically, so Starbucks sounds like they're not doing something. It sounds like they're blocking me or not providing me access in some way by which my life could be a lot easier. And that's basically, it sounds like there's an exchange of data that's critical here, right?
Exactly. And that's a good way to put it. The Salesforce button is exchanging data with Starbucks and getting back a gift card number that I can email to all the people I met at the trade show, as opposed to an exchange of clicks and HTML and keyboard presses, which is what I have to do today. I go to Starbucks.com, buy a gift card, type in my credit card number, get a number. And I do that 29 more times to send the 30 people that I'm going to send this $10 gift card to. And so, and Starbucks stands to facilitate incremental revenue they wouldn't have had by virtue of the convenience and integratability. If Starbucks was the only coffee joint that offered an API and Salesforce and HubSpot and other CRMs integrated, are you going to actually say, no, that's too easy? I'm going to go to Caribou Coffee and manually buy 30 gift cards? Said no one.
And so to bring this kind of like the story a little, advance it a little bit in the sense that like Smith and Walensky could do the same thing, right? Like they could be like, hey, here's the API, integrate the API into Salesforce. You know, Rob, you send these people your Starbucks cards. You know, Dan's a little more highfalutin, like, hey, CIO, here's your Smith and Walensky, you know, steak.
Exactly. Exactly.
Et cetera.
So, but until you have an API, you can't do that. You can't connect different pieces of software together to create an outcome that Starbucks didn't think of. Like, what if we had an online contest? What if we had raffles? There are so many consumption use cases that Starbucks is not indulging because they don't have an API.
And so it sounds like, and the way I've kind of internalized and thought about APIs is that like it's an application programming interface, meaning like there's two software applications. In this case, Salesforce and then some application on Starbucks side, and the API then allows those two applications to exchange and share information.
Exactly. And I don't even know because I'm over on the Salesforce side, I don't even know what's happening. All I know is that I push a button says send prospect a gift, count one banana, two banana, they're all sent. Then they're branded for me. It says from Rob to prospect I just met.
So I could see from a marketing perspective or maybe an innovation perspective of like knowing what APIs can do almost demystifies and decomplicates a lot of what software development is about, of being like, oh man, wouldn't it be great if we could do X, right? You can end up in these art of the possible sessions, right? Where we're kind of blue sky and coming up with crazy ideas. Like, man, wouldn't it be amazing if we could do X? And then you're like, well, and then you're fine. Nobody's saying it's a bad idea. Everybody's going yes. And because you can't like poo-poo any ideas in a innovation blue sky session. Right. But then when you finally get to the point of like assessment, you're kind of like, sometimes like, damn, that's complicated. We got to build all of that. And what I hear you saying is, no, you don't.
You actually have to deconstruct. You don't have to construct. Sales or Starbucks already has this. They're just not merchandising it as an API. And that's the crazy thing is the API economy has been a phrase for a long time, but not many have taken people up on it.
So let's dig into the API economy and what you mean by that. And I think let's also expand the example, because now we're kind of talking about like one API, right? And I think where you were going is with the deconstruction of a complex idea, what I automatically go to is like, oh, wait, are there actually multiple partners I could use to build my one solution and use and access all those different partners by their APIs by which to bring that functionality to my master solution?
That's the whole idea of microservices, is to say, I am combining and permuting a bunch of these APIs together to create a solution that didn't exist. All of the component Legos existed, but they weren't assembled in this way before. There's a company out there, and I'm forgetting the name of it, and hopefully I'll find it here shortly, but they have called, and I've heard them called, the Twilio for banks. So if you want to make a banking application, goodbye and good luck. You've got to find a way to integrate with all these banks, figure out how to build functionality to make a deposit, make a withdrawal, make a transfer, request a certified check. Or you could use this company. And all you have to do is let the user type in their routing number and password, and all of a sudden you can provide all that functionality, which maybe their bank doesn't even do yet natively in their own native app, on your own. So now imagine that in Salesforce, let's say your company doesn't let you expense gifts. Okay, now in Salesforce, you click send my customers a gift. The first API says, let me take some money out of his bank account using this banking API. Let me use that to create a synthetic credit card from a company called privacy.com. So I don't have fraud. Then we use that privacy.com credit card to go buy a gift card at Starbucks. All that takes 10 seconds. And I didn't have to learn how to process credit cards. I didn't have to learn how to wrap entire banking APIs. I certainly didn't have to reinvent Starbucks.com. I could probably literally do that in 30 lines of software.
So it's like the specialization of software. You use the term microservices, which I think I is a new term I love. And so I think you talked a lot about it, but now put a fine point on it. Like, what the hell is a microservice as you think about, you know, software and APIs?
A microservice is a microservice architectures are a design pattern that say, take the stuff your software does and make it small.
And specific?
Pardon me?
Small and specific?
Small and very specific. And the reason is not just because that's fun, but because think about this. Think about the Lego metaphor. If your Legos are really big and you're trying to build a boat, your boat is going to look like a hot mess because it's going to be all jaggy, right? And you'd be like, if I squint, I can see a boat. And in my mind, I want a boat, but it's a disaster of a boat. But now imagine that the Legos were all those little one-dot Legos. It's not smooth, but it's way more of a boat than it would be if I make these big jaggy ones. And so the metaphor holds true, right? The smaller the microservices are that you use to build your application, the more closely to the ideal outcome, or the intended outcome, I should say, you can achieve. Because what if the only API, try me on this. What if Starbucks API was, here's our gift card API. Invoke this API to get a $100 gift card. Well, hang on a second. I want a $20 gift card. Yeah, this API is for a $100 gift card. Well, that's a big fat block. You are precluding me from realizing my intention because you didn't make a microservice. You made an API.
So what are some, give me an example and give the listeners an example of things they do every day that are powered by an API?
Things you do every day that are powered by an API. Does anybody check Twitter on their phone or Facebook on their phone?
Just
probably. Of course we do. So when you launch Facebook on your phone, that software that's on your phone is talking to an API to say, what updates does this person have? I could write an application to run on a server to get your updates. Maybe I'm writing a social marketing app. I've got a startup writing a brand new social marketing app that I wants to read and write to your wall or your timeline. Okay, I'm going to use the same API that your phone uses to say, what are my updates? And when you make a post, your phone is calling an API on Facebook saying, I, Rob Page, want to make a post on my group or my wall or whatever, my timeline. So let's say it's a group. Okay, if I'm writing my social marketing application, I can do that. Sorry?
I'm yelling at my dog. Sorry. Did that actually come through? My apologies.
Yes. We'll have
to cut COVID life, man. The COVID life.
Because I'm writing this application, I can post 20 of those a second because there's an API. Without the API, I'd be stuck there banging my thumbs on my phone trying to do 20 posts for the company that uses my software.
And I think from our world, my favorite example, one of the easiest examples is when you're kind of logging into Netflix or forget your password on Netflix and you're kind of doing that on your phone. That's an API working with Netflix application and your phone in order. And so that, like, Netflix didn't build that. Like, that's not something, they didn't have to build that software. They used someone else's API that was specialized in that kind of password sign-in, password recovery in order to power that.
Another great example. Every time it says login with Google, you're using an API. Google publishes an API saying, I will help you authenticate people. Just do this. And that way, now so many people have Google accounts. As a startup entrepreneur, I don't really have to think about user accounts and authentication until version 3 or 4 of my product.
Got it. So it brings me back, though, to our most popular episode, the build versus buy episode, right? Where we talked a little bit about Jeff Lawson, and kind of Ask Your Developer, where he talks about not just build versus buy, but actually build versus die, where like Shamim Muhammad at CarMax, you know, he's like, oh, I think about rent, buy, build, like in these ideas. And we talked about it last time, but I think it's important to bring it back. It kind of gives this impression of like, you should be buying software. You should be building, you know, your software. But the API economy and the API approach actually says the opposite of that. Or, you know, I guess it like put build versus buy into the API conversation and clarify that you build with APIs, right? But you're not writing a million lines of code. You're cobbling is probably a bad word, but you're bringing different microservices together and coding those together. And that's what build actually means. Did I get that right?
Absolutely. So, at the risk of overloading you with a metaphor, let me try this one.
You overloading with metaphors?
No, overloading you. There's no such thing as overloading me.
That's right.
If I say, do you want to buy a spec house or a custom house to be in the house of your dreams, the house of your intent, you're going to say, I want a custom house, right?
Right.
Okay. Because otherwise you're living in someone else's house and it's not differentiated. If you're a company and you're thinking about like, this is how I'm going to manifest a customer experience, I want my own to build my company around. Well, so does anybody think, we're going to build our own house? Like that's an expression that does not connote immediately going out and planting 3 acres of pine trees. Why not? Well, because you go get wood at Home Depot, idiot. So just like we're not saying go get go plant trees. We're not saying go harvest iron ore so that you can build your own screwdriver so that you can drive the fasteners into the wood that you just bought on the 3 acres you planted. That's dumb. And so this metaphor of be smart and assemble and permute the stuff from Home Depot. It's the same 2x4s. It's the same screws. But what makes it custom is how you've connected them. And so there are a million use cases for a Starbucks gift card API. But the one I want is I want a button in Salesforce so that lets me gift people I just met at a trade show. That's my custom house. I don't have to build, I don't have to plant coffee beans. I don't have to process credit cards. I don't have to build a CRM. I just have to be smart enough to build a button that when you click it, calls a Salesforce, Starbucks API. I can then take that product and put it in the Salesforce marketplace and sell it. Very small number of lines of software and a very small investment in intellectual property with a hugely differentiated outcome.
So what does that then either free up developers and programmers to do? And then what are they actually, then building? Like, what are they actually coding if they're just kind of bringing all these APIs and snapping all the APIs together? I'm assuming the code then is figuring out how to bring it all together.
It is the code. Well, the humans think about how to bring it all together, and then the code brings it all together in a certain pattern so that when you click the button in Salesforce, it buys a gift card as opposed to transferring money if you use a different API.
So how did the skills of a, you know, and here's a dumb question. Are people that write computer code coders, programmers, developers? What the hell is the right word to use?
I think there's probably a lot loaded in there. There's probably some religious battles that, you know, I don't want the comments to light up with religious definitions.
I want the comments to light up. Let it fly, man. Go.
Well, because there's engineer. And so professional engineers object to software engineers calling themselves software engineers because they never passed a PE exam. I mean, all that stuff. But back to our software people argument. There are people who write. One of my customers 2 years ago was a software engineer, like engineered software that ran as a amazing mass of Excel Visual Basic macros. And it was essentially a server. Like, it's nuts what this person was able to do.
Yeah.
So are they develop software. And I think, you know, the book behind you, Ask Your Developer, I think saying I'm a software developer is a reasonable term for these people.
Okay. So how did a software developer's job change? Because I remember actually when I founded Citizen Effect and we like went and we were first building the site, right? We kind of had this moment in like, I think APIs kind of came of age, what, in like 09, 2010, 2011, is that about right?
It depends on where you were in the sort of progressive thinking, but yeah, ish.
Ish. So I remember we had this like kind of strategic conversation. We'd hired this firm, you know, and they were going to build the site for us. And, you know, it's funny, Michael Slaby, who we had on the show, he was actually our kind of on our board and kind of, you know, the acting kind of like CTO advisor for what to do. And we had this decision. We're like, okay, should we just code it the way things have always been coded, or should we code it through APIs? And the developers are like, the API thing looks pretty cool. Never done it before. We have no idea what we're going to do. So it's going to take a lot longer. So it was one of like my really horrible, bad leadership decisions of being like, just get the damn thing done. Like, just code it like old school. And so what was that shift? Like, what was that shift in how developers and software people thought pre-API? And now that APIs exist, how it changed the way they thought and developed post-API? Because it seemed to have been like a fairly significant event in the industry.
Because if you were to watch this tape at 10x, it would be mind-blowing. Because the transformation in developer productivity is difficult to overstate. Take you back to this
productivity. So it's a productivity gains was one massive benefit.
Productivity, yes, but productivity manifested in higher RPMs. And higher RPMs is the fail quick, learn, iterate OODA loop, which is what it's all about. No one really knows what customers want until they see what they don't want. And so it's really just a revolutions per minute issue.
So would you argue that APIs probably didn't bring about kind of Agile and Scrum and all of those things, but it was
intrinsically linked. The notion that I'm going to be, the notion that I'm not going to be waterfall, that I'm not going to have the hubris of thinking I know what the real requirements are at the front, means that I can't get over invested. I have to test the idea. Testing the idea means how do I invest as little as possible? Well, the way I invest as little as possible to test the idea is to integrate other stuff.
Hmm.
So it's all about the glue or the mortar between these things. That's what your investment is. I want to use as much Lego as I can and as little glue. And then test the idea. Do people click on it? Nobody clicks on it. Okay, throw it away. Thank God I didn't build all my own Legos.
Yeah. So, hey, when you first threw out this idea of like what we're going to do, like, hey, let's talk about APIs. I'm like, stupid idea. This is dumb. This is like the dumbest, like there's no show here. I was wrong, Rob, I can admit. Because now I actually want to write the book on the kind of like the history and impact of APIs. Because what I hear you saying is that shift in software development towards APIs, A, not only resulted in productivity gains, but in a way it almost sounds like it probably could have strongly affected the finance market of being like, you used to, you know, so A, you had this mindset before with waterfall, of like, I know what the answer is. Give me all this money. We're going to develop it, right? I can't imagine how many kind of like software defense contracts, you know, for like with a lot of zeros on the end started that way.
Well, and in the aggregate, how many billions of dollars was spent in Silicon Valley writing authentication software? Like that's nauseating, right?
Exactly. Over and over again.
Over and over again because no one had an API for it.
Well, and this is a great, for people that aren't familiar with APIs, that's a wonderful example of like, listen, the code has to be written once. Here's the thousands and thousands of lines of codes on, you know, authenticating a user. Now, here's two lines of code that you can put into your code to use that thousands and thousands and lines of authentication code. So you know where I have to freaking write it. It's already done. And don't build something that's non-differentiating. I think this was Lawson's point, ask your developers, like, don't build shit that doesn't differentiate you. Go get the microservice via the API by which to use it, because it's just authenticating a user.
Exactly. And way back when, there were no standards, so you had to build it all, which is why companies were raising huge sums of money just to get to MVP. And now the new think is, if you're not going for your seed round with the MVP because all these APIs make it super cheap, you didn't eat enough ramen. Like, bring me an MVP before you get seeded, because all these Legos already exist. Just assemble them.
So what's next then? Like, what's coming? What's like API 2.0 or API? Like, what's the next thing on the horizon here that's going to, because in a way, like APIs, the way after this conversation, I'm like, APIs actually were an amazing tool for developers, A, just on productivity, because now you don't have to write code for a bunch of things that have already been figured out. And like, you don't have to do that duplicate effort. But it also gives you access to all these other best in class microservices or tools that other people have had. So you can be like, okay, cool. Here's my sign on, here's my authentication, here's my chat, here's my X, Y, and Z. Now I can really, really focus on what makes our product different and special and innovative in the market.
And that, right? I think that's super key, because it means that there's that, Peter Thiel has this 0-to-1 notion. Very few things are really 0-to-1.
Define that for the listeners. Like, what does that mean?
0-to-1. The hypothesis is if you want to do something really amazing, you have to create something that didn't exist before. Very difficult to do. So really most applications are one to many. So they're already one, two, or three, and I'm going to be the fifth or the sixth or the seventh or the 15th, and I'm going to come at it with a different angle. And it's the way you get that different angle is by, again, combining and permuting very quickly. But the APIs are not just about developers not having to do the labor of felling trees and carving the bark off and slicing up into logs and boards, which is just the shit work of software in the early days. Think about it this way. It allows for hyper-specialization and all the economy of scale that goes with it. There are AWS is a great example. I could today, like in the next 5 minutes, I could stand up one server. Like the first company I worked on, that was a $20,000 Spark station. Yeah. We had to wait 6 weeks for it to come in and all that kind of stuff. So I literally have a Linux server more powerful than that one in 30 seconds. More importantly, if I wanted 100 more, I would just have to wait 10 minutes and now I have 100. So why is that possible? Because Amazon has unconscionably large numbers of these things. And so the unit cost goes down and they spread that across everybody. If I'm an authentication vendor, my unit costs go way down. I spread that across everyone. And so a modern piece of SaaS may have 20 vendors that are their cost of goods sold. I pay a little bit to the authentication vendor. I pay a little bit to the credit card processing vendor. I paid a little bit to the market intelligence vendor. So your GL looks like, wow, you got a lot of expenses. Yeah, but all of them are kind of small.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that I think unlocks creativity, where there's no huge capital requirements in order to innovate.
Well, and I think that, you know, kind of now for the marketers listening to the program, I think that's the key to like why you need to understand what APIs, less of what APIs are, but the power of APIs, of being like, listen, those crazy ideas that you know you have or those innovative ideas that you want to pursue are now more attainable because you don't have to build all that shit yourself.
Absolutely. And the so in terms of like what's API 2, I think it there are a couple potential directions for it. One is sort of low code, no code, which again is a desire to democratize development. The problem, in my personal opinion, is they all come with unacceptable concessions, meaning you can't get acceptably close enough to the desired outcome to make a low code implementation a proper test of your idea.
Yeah.
Because you're always like, oh crap, I wish it did this. And so I'm just going to pretend it did that. And then the experience is jacked. And then you're testing, you're not really testing what you want to test because right. You're the environment. Now, if all you're doing is an administrative thing, like I need to track applicants for one of my jobs, whatever, go with low code, no code. But I don't think that's API 2.0.
So just for listeners again, so like low code, no code, the best way to think about low code, no code is if you've ever been on a user interface on a website where it allows you to drag and drop things together and click things together in order to quote unquote program something, that's what no code, low code is. And so, and I agree. I think my experience with low code, no code is I can go in and be dangerous at the beginning and have a lot of fun up front, but then there's always the call to Rob Page that's being like, okay, Rob, like, what did I do wrong? Or how do I make sure it does this? Or how does it connect to that? Where then you as a developer can then go clean things up or even dive into the code and make the changes in the code that are necessary. So I think it's a wonderful advancement that's still advancing.
It is. And I just think that fundamentally, writing software is more like poetry than manufacturing. So you're never gonna have an algorithm that writes Shakespeare. You're never gonna have an algorithm or a low code environment that writes software that you are gonna, you know, IPO on. Just not gonna happen.
So I don't know. So there's a great book called The Master Algorithm, which is really, really good. I think it was on Bill Gates's like list, and that's how I found it and read it or listened to it. And it talks about there around AI and classical music. And so, man, you can imagine if anyone gets fired up around whether or not a computer can kind of compose something as beautiful as Bach, Beethoven, et cetera, it's classical music fans. And so what they did was, like, there's this AI that does compose music, and they brought everybody into the concert hall and they had someone play like a Bach piece and an AI piece. And people are like, oh, this one piece was so human and filled with emotion and amazing. And guess which one it was?
The computer one.
It was the computer one. But anyway, I think, you know, I think it's all progression. I mean, it's a little terrifying when you can deep fake out, like, you know, kind of classical music.
It is. This goes to what are the durable areas for human creative expression?
Yeah.
And what does that mean for the job market? So if composers could be ML'd out of a job, like, uh-oh, that's a problem. I don't think software will be able to write software in the next 500 years.
Well, this is what's kind of crazy, though. When you said that, part of me feels like the one place that's the safest right now for human creativity is the human creativity in a way around software, in the sense that, like, you have all these microservices now, and you need this kind of creative idea and this creative thinking about how to bring these things together into a powerful human experience, right? Because, you know,
the human experience is emotion backed by logic, not logic, you know, not vice versa. We make emotional decisions, rationalize them on logic. And so until we can create synthetic emotion, which maybe is coming, but I'm just pretty bullish that software developers are going to be in demand for a long time. Humans.
Fantastic. Well, man, so hey,
did we answer what an API is and why we all need them?
I think so. And I actually learned a little bit from you today, which is a rare thing on this program.
Amazing. So.
Appreciate it.
And this ties back into software people, because software people can communicate about APIs and the API economy, even if they are not software developers. And this, the whole notion that a software person is not a programmer is, like, so key, right? You can think about an API and say, for example, okay, we're going to have a startup that lets you rent other people houses, but I'm going to make it an API so that vacation planners don't have to click on Vrbo or Airbnb. They can integrate it into their vacationplanning.com application. That is a merchandising innovation. It's not technical innovation, merchandising innovation that would not be possible without APIs.
Got it. So you bring up a good point. I think if you're new to Art of the Possible and kind of listen to this, it's the first episode or started later. I think we have a trio of podcasts now that go together really, really well. One is Build versus Buy, which is episode 2, right? Where we kind of, in a way, this conversation starts there on, like, should you build your software? Should you buy your software? Should you rent your software, et cetera? So I think that's one. I think then it's Software People, which was our last show, which is episode 8. And then I think now we have this of what is an API. So if you're listening and kind of like, they like, great, there's now 9 podcasts. Which ones, where should I start? I kind of start there with, like, kind of the
289. I like it.
289 kind of trio. So, well, Rod, this is great. We have some great guests coming on the show here in the next couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're going to have Susie Sosa from Verb, which is a phenomenal platform. She's a wonderful person, a wonderful startup entrepreneur. I think she can talk about the art of the possible, both in building a business, but then also the art of possible as it relates to that personal kind of, you know, art of the possible that's necessary in order to be a startup founder. So I think that's going to be a great conversation. We're going to have Jeff Perkins, who's the CMO and chief product officer at Park Mobile, which we've mentioned last time. And then we're also going to have Brian Solis, who is a kind of futurist writer, awesome guy. And he's going to be in the next couple of weeks. So we got some great guests coming on.
Great guests. I can't wait. And all those have, like, API bits in them. The whole notion of, like, parking space as API, super key.
Love it. All right, man. Well, hey, thanks for the conversation.
Yep. Take care. Bye.
Cheers.